Welcome to syndicatednews.net. According to an article published by the New York Times, the Vatican declined to defrock a U.S. priest who abused boys, and he was one of many. Apparently, the Vatican has been doing this with impunity for perhaps hundreds of years. In this case, internal correspondence between bishops in Wisconsin that ties Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, our current pope, and officials in the local church made it clear that they were discussing child abuse, they were discussing a specific priest, and the Vatican was really more interested in avoiding scandal than in protecting the children. Tonight, we're interviewing Jeff Anderson, who is one of the attorneys involved in these historical cases. They are suing the Vatican. We invite Jeff Anderson from Anderson Advocates to join us this evening. Mr. Anderson, I thank you for giving us the time. I listened to your interview on CNN.
Well, I think the courage of the survivors inspires us and strengthens us, and it is important because every day when they speak and we join them in that effort, we're protecting other kids and reaching across time, and I do feel that it's important and it's a moral imperative.
I was reading specifically about the fact that our current pope was the author of that letter that states that priests around the world should basically keep this quiet, and while I read the entire letter, it basically implies that they should keep everything secret and private and allow lots of time, many years to pass. I have to assume there will be more than just one lawsuit in this case.
Yes, well, there's two cases right now against the Vatican that we have brought armed with the courage of two clients. One out of Portland that started in 2002. The other one that you saw featured on the CNN piece by Terry Kohut that we brought in Wisconsin recently. And it's likely there will be more, but it's also going to take a while for those cases to wind their way through the courts, even though the first has been around for 8 years already, all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, in fact, in which they've ruled in our favor and given us a green light. But many obstacles remain to holding them accountable. And they will throw up legal barriers and impediments, and we have a long road, but important ahead of us to traverse and travail. And when it comes to the protocol you're referring to, it's correct to say that this pope has been involved in the imposition of secrecy. But it's more correct to say that every pope, this one, Cardinal Ratzinger, formerly now Pope Benedict, and all of his predecessors have created protocols and their own internal laws that demand and require absolute secrecy on all matters pertaining to sexual abuse and other scandalous matters. And it's the imposition of those secrecy protocols from the top, from this pope and his predecessors, that accounts more than anything else for the fact that there is this grave and serious worldwide problem that persists, and it continues to persist because they continue to adhere to secrecy. And the Vatican, the Pope, imposes on all of the clerics, from the priests to the bishops, to the archbishops, to the cardinals, this requirement that they keep scandalous things and material secret, both the files and the evidence. And that means away from secular authorities, law enforcement, and that's what keeps offenders in the priesthood and protected from prosecution and removal, and that's what makes them repeat the offenses, and that's what makes us cause to have to sue them, and to come to believe after 27 years of this work that all the evidentiary roads and legal responsibility for this worldwide problem leads directly to Rome, and that is to the Vatican, and that means this Pope and each of his predecessors, including John Paul II.
In March of 2010, I noticed in the news that a choir member had been procuring male prostitutes for the papal, what they call, gentlemen in waiting. Do you think this kind of secrecy is what allowed that?
Yeah, I do believe that the imposition, first, of mandatory celibacy on clerics causes the suppression of sexuality, which ultimately is going to leak out. And then when you overlay the mandatory imposition of sexuality with the imposition of absolute secrecy around any violations of that, any sexual acting out towards kids or others, and there is a decree that comes from the top, both in the canon law, that is the church law, and protocols for imposing secrecy, you have an alchemy of disaster, that is suppression of sexuality, people acting out inappropriately, and then you have all the superiors required to keep it secret, and then it flourishes, and sexual abuse and crimes of sexual abuse flourish in secrecy, and that's why we have the crisis that has now just begun to be developed and realized in Europe and has been the focus of our attention in the U.S. for now over 25 years.
And I also noticed that the Vatican has instructed, maybe not directly, but implied to churches to do everything they can legally so that they cannot be sued and lose more real estate.
Yes, the Vatican lawyers, the bishops, and the bishop lawyers for years have been devising complicated and sophisticated legal strategies for escaping and or avoiding the legal accountability for their complicity in crimes. They, for example, have organized parishes separately from dioceses. They've split up corporations in the diocese and then moved property or money from one to another when they saw that either lawsuits were coming or judgments were made or settlements were imminent. That has happened in San Diego. That has happened in Davenport. That is of record and established. And there has been, thus, a long-standing pattern that has also emerged that they have tried to escape legal accountability and responsibility by using legal mechanisms such as dividing the corporations, subdividing the corporations, and secretly transferring assets to avoid having to pay judgments or settlements to the survivors when ordered by the court or required to do so. And that kind of tactic remains and a serious challenge in many cases that we have encountered and continue to encounter from the West Coast to the East Coast.
And I see when I read the news, when anyone reads the news, we see that the awareness, this problem is spreading to countries worldwide. It's not just the U.S. that sees it.
It is a problem that is worldwide. All of the protocols that have been revealed to us in 25 years through litigation and the courage of survivors in the U.S. are in place and intact in all of Western civilization. But it's only more recently has it come to the fore in Ireland, in England, in Austria, in Belgium, and even in Italy and in South America, and more notably in Mexico, where we've been heavily involved recently. And so it is a worldwide problem, and now there has been an awakening overseas that occurred in the U.S. to the gravity of this problem about 10 years ago in 1992, and then very much so in 2002, and now that awareness of the magnitude and the depth of the problem in the clerical culture is really reached a level of awareness worldwide.
And in reading about this awful situation, I came across a website, I'm wondering if you're familiar with it, called bishopaccountability.org, and it also shows up on bishop-accountability.org, called Abuse Tracker. Are you familiar with that website?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that site. It's a site that was constructed many years ago by some very devout and loyal Catholics who had some computer and archival skills, who felt it was important to start to store the data that was being assembled to better protect kids and inform the public. And it is a valuable resource and archival database that tracks both lawsuits, public disclosures, settlements, and then archives and organizes data in a way that the public can now be made even more aware than ever before. And it is through that kind of electronic medium, such as Bishop Accountability, that people are now becoming more aware of how grave this problem is, who the offenders are, what their history is, how the bishops and the Vatican have been complicit in these crimes. In the final analysis, by archiving and storing and organizing this data electronically and making it available to the public, they're doing great public service to all of us, and even a greater public service to those other children born and yet to be that need to be protected from the many offenders still at large, on the loose, and given license by the clerical culture and the hierarchy.
And in that site, Bishop Accountability, it has photographs of the actual priests, and it states when a case was brought against them, in what community, and it also shows where they've been moved to. So if anyone is concerned about a priest, I think you should examine that website, bishopaccountability.org. It's an eye-opener, replete with photos and details about the lawsuits. I'm assuming you have a few cases that have wound up in this database. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Bishop Accountability, bishopaccountability.org website has been maintained for many years, and many of the cases that we have brought, many of the depositions that we have been taken of bishops and hierarchs from cardinals on down under oath have been made available to them. And the good news is they have archived and organized it in a way that you can plug in names and pull up data readily about who are offenders, known to have been offenders, and what their histories are. The bad news is that this is a bunch of lay people doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. And this is the kind of thing that should have been done long ago by all the bishops across the world, and could have been done because they have that data, but they choose to keep it secret. The beauty of Bishop Accountability and the people behind it is they choose to make it public, thus protect kids in the future and in the present. In other words, Bishop Accountability are doing the right thing. The bishops and the Vatican, and particularly the Pope, are doing the wrong thing by keeping it a secret.
Well, I'm noticing there are also articles carried by the National Catholic Reporter that seem a little more honest to me in 2010 than articles I read, say, even 5 years ago. You're familiar with the National Catholic Reporter?
I'm familiar with the National Catholic Reporter because I've been representing survivors of abuse by clergy for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the NCR, the National Catholic Reporter, have been reporting on these cases and survivors' efforts for years. We are both familiar with it and their coverage. And I would say that the NCR and the Catholic Reporter have been more balanced than I would have expected given their ownership and their natural bias. They still have some biases that are naturally reflected, as we all do, by where we come from, and because they are who they are, I think they would like to favor the clerical point of view, but I think they've also been honest and balanced many times and often courageous in reporting this scandal as it has unfolded.
And Mr. Anderson, you're based in Minnesota. Were a person who has suffered quietly and secretly from this same problem, molested by a priest anywhere in the world, may they call you, or is there a registry where they might find an attorney specializing in this type of abuse in their state?
Well, we are have our primary offices in St. Paul, Minnesota, and we maintain a website called AndersonAdvocates.com. And on that website, we do link to several resources and have resources and legal resources across the country, both with whom we collaborate and make referrals to. So if survivors and others are looking for help and or guidance on how to help them in the recovery of power or in the protection of other children, we always try to help however we can. And we use our website, and people can either email us at AndersonAdvocates.com or call us on our toll-free number at 888-567-5557 and consult with one of our lawyers. And if it's a matter that we're not able to handle across the country where we try to help, we always try to find somebody that can if we can't.
That's excellent. So people can call you for referrals in different states.
Yes, they may. And we do handle cases across the country in a variety of states and collaborate with lawyers across the country and even into Mexico and have licensures in several states.
And the reason I'm asking is because as this problem, it's not spreading. It's been in existence for hundreds of years all over the world, but people are becoming more aware and discussing it. We spoke to members of SNAP, and they explained to me that while you're not the only attorney that is handling sex abuse cases with the Vatican, you're the most effective.
Well, at the current time, we're the only firm that has cases against the Vatican. And I think probably the will and the resource to pursue them with the vigor that is necessary. We're certainly not the only lawyers in the country dedicated to child protection, but we're always willing to help lawyers and survivors across the country do what we can, bring our experience to bear, the courage and inspiration of the survivors that come forward and break the silence. And in some way, every day, hope we're making a difference in the lives of other children, both helping to protect them and helping in some ways to recover or help the survivors recover their own power by protecting other kids and finding their voice and speaking it out. And the use of the Internet and the use of the electronic mediums is really given us all a better sense of awareness and access to information, and information is power.
Well, Mr. Anderson, I can't thank you enough for giving us this time. We really appreciate it. And we are going to be talking with SNAP maybe sometime later this week. is it okay with you if we play parts of this interview during the discussion with them so that they can comment on our conversation?
Yes, yes you may. And you may replay and play this interview with anywhere to anybody with full permission from me.
Thank you. So I may also play the audio on YouTube.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. We so appreciate that you're taking the time to talk with us about this. It's such an important matter.
You're very welcome, and thank you for your interest in it. It is a moral imperative that we all must address, as painful as it is for all of us.
And I'm assuming that 800 number, if it's not answered during the day, it takes messages?
That's correct.
Because sometimes I'm noticing that many people, they're not even able to talk about it, and it's easier for them to leave a message and ask for help in the dark of night when they don't even want to talk to a secretary or an attorney. They just want to know where they should proceed and what steps to take.
And they can always leave a message on our 800 number or email us confidentially, completely privately at andersonadvocates.com.
Wonderful. And the victims from, say, Europe who need help and referrals, and now Latin America is coming out. Every country in Latin America seems to be facing this problem, and now they're noticing, and now they're coming out. Can they write to you in Spanish?
Yes, we have a Spanish section on our website, and we have Spanish speakers available to both take calls and give advice, who are lawyers and paraprofessionals. And we're acutely aware of this being a grave and unaddressed problem in the Latino communities, in the Spanish-speaking communities, and we really want to help and reach out to them to help find their voice, take action, and do more than what has been done, because there is a huge amount of, or a grave problem in the Latino communities yet to be spoken of and are even close to being addressed. So it's important to us to be available, to have Spanish speakers, which we do, available across the country and in our offices here, and under the Spanish section to our website at andersonadvocates.com.
I spoke to Spanish-speaking survivors from Ixtapa, Zihuatanejo, Distrito Federal in Mexico, and one theme that ran through each family was that apparently if they came forward or complained, it was their family that was threatened with excommunication. Was that a practice? Because it seems to be very common in Mexico that if a child came forward, the parents would be threatened.
The history in Mexico and other parts of Latin America, but particularly Mexico, has been revealed to us, most notably in some cases we brought against Cardinal Rivera in Mexico City involving a rapist priest by the name of Nicolas Aguilar, revealed to us a pattern that when victims would come forward, they would be discouraged and rebuked, if not threatened, by then Bishop Rivera and other superiors like him. So that is a pattern that is alarming and disturbing. And it has silenced and intimidated some survivors. But I think there is now a movement in Mexico and a group called SNAP Mexico that has been active and now giving cultural permission in Mexico to break the silence the way people were given cultural permission in the 80s to break the silence. And so I see that changing, and we're encouraging survivors in the Spanish and Latino communities to find their voice, give them hope to know that something can be done, and that every time they do, perhaps another child will be protected. And there can be, and oftentimes is, legal recourse that can even be used in the U.S. system, because the Mexican legal system doesn't provide as effective recourse as the U.S. legal system for these crimes and these wrongs.
I noticed one case in particular in which a deaf survivor is suing the Pope specifically?
Well, I do believe it will. I represent that courageous man.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Kohout just appeared on CNN. He had been a John Doe. Most of the clients that we do represent and the survivors we work with remain anonymous, but he chose to speak up on behalf of himself and bring that case quite courageously against the Vatican. He is not the first with whom we have worked to bring cases against the Vatican, and he won't be the last. And my answer to the question is, I believe it will work. I believe there is a legal imperative before us and a real opportunity to protect other children by that case and others. And I also believe that if we do move forward with those cases, we expose the criminals and those that protect them. We protect children, and maybe in the end there'll be a purification of that aspect of the clerical culture that chooses to protect criminals, keep secrets, and worry more about their reputation and the well-being and the safety of the children.
Well, I can't thank you enough for spending this time with us. We so appreciate you. I know that you're very, very busy, but we found it extremely important and key in our talk with SNAP to make sure that we spoke with you as well. And I thank you for your work in this area.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye for now.
Thanks a lot. Thank you so much.